From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in the summer of 2015. That was around the time that something seemed to change in local school districts. For years, the Gay Alliance of the Genesee Valley has worked in local school districts, both with students, but mostly with teachers and staffs. But in 2015, the interest increased dramatically. And that was the time that the Gay Alliance found itself fielding phone calls from a few dozen districts. In the time since, they've worked to create more inclusive school environments, how to make students feel comfortable, what to do about bullying, how to accommodate transgender students. That and a lot more. Districts had questions. Some of the national news stories probably helped spark some of this outreach, but we'll talk about that. And we wanted to know, what does the training entail? How have schools received it? What's changed? And I'll let you know that when I spoke to Rowan Collins from the Gay Alliance, and I asked if there's a particular local district that has been most receptive, kind of a model for what Rowan is hoping to see, well, it's Brighton, which is why Brighton is represented in studio today. And I'm not rolling my eyes at all. I'm having fun with the fact that I was just telling Kevin McGowan, the superintendent of Brighton Central School District. You know, Kevin was on a panel recently as we talked about diversity and teaching staffs. And Brighton is a district that I think has been very clear about prizing diversity, celebrating diversity, and looking for inclusion. So I guess it wasn't a surprise, but Kevin, welcome back to the program, and it's nice to see you.
Thanks very much, Evan, and thanks for saying that. I think you're absolutely right.
Rowan Collins is the education coordinator of the LGBTQ Academy at the Gay Alliance of the Genesee Valley. And Rowan, it's nice to see you back here.
Nice to see you as well, Evan. Thanks for having us.
And we have a couple of students who are sophomores at Brighton High School, and they are members of the Gender and Sexuality Alliance Club at Brighton High School. Kiki Senda is here. Kiki, welcome to you. And Francis Reka is here. Francis, welcome to you as well.
Hi.
Rowan, I want to start with you about what you think changed in 2015. I mean, I didn't go back and look up sort of where all of the news stories, I say all, as if I could sort of catalog every single news story, but there's probably, my guess is that was around the time where certain things kind of flared up in national media. Is that right? What do you think changed?
Definitely some national news stories to an extent. That spring and early summer was certainly when the larger conversation around Caitlyn Jenner's transition was starting to happen.
Okay.
But I think the thing that really tipped off a lot of the school interest was that in July of 2015, the Department of Education here in New York State set out a guidance document about accommodating transgender and gender nonconforming students in all of our public schools. And I think a lot of school districts, especially locally, looked at that guidance document and went, we're not really sure how to do this. We're going to need a little bit of outside help. And I think that's when the phones really started ringing off the hook. That's, I think, certainly the catalyst.
And from your perspective, do you... Do you celebrate the fact that districts are reaching out saying, help us? I mean, for you, is this a moment where you say, look, if you've got questions, it's natural to have questions, but let's talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. It was amazing, actually, to start getting the calls that we did, because I think it informed a larger conversation, which has kind of informed the way that we do our programming now. It started with we just don't know how to implement this one policy. Can you just come in and help us with that? And then when we went in to have the larger conversation, they recognized that there was a whole lot of work that hadn't been done around lots of other identities within the community. And so the larger conversation got to happen. It wasn't just about how do we do this policy. It was how do we change the climate?
Okay, and so Kevin McGowan, the superintendent of Brighton Central School District, Brighton got in touch in, Rowan was saying, March of 2015. And Kevin, for you, you know, tell me about your feelings as a superintendent about why the outreach to the Gay Alliance and what you were hoping to accomplish at the time.
So for several years, we had been working with some families in our district and students who were discussing their transition, their identity, our environment, and you know, just the best ways that we could support every child in the district. And we had worked with an out-of-state provider. You can imagine, I mean, things have changed so dramatically very quickly, but there wasn't a lot around in terms of support. And sometimes when you're working with families who are very in touch with a particular issue, they're able to recommend particular trainers or experiences that they've had or people that they know are knowledgeable in the area. So we had worked with somebody actually previously who provided some good support in the district and training for our staff, but really did then look locally and say, you know, there's got to be capacity here also. And that's where we hooked up then with Rowan and the Gay Alliance in March of that year in 2015.
When he talks about the change, and again, tell me about the state change that you were just describing that kind of sparked, do you think, some of this interest, Rowan?
Yeah, it was a guidance document set out by State Ed around accommodating transgender and gender nonconforming students in public schools.
Okay. That come across your desk? I mean, did that raise any questions for you, Kevin?
No, actually, I'm glad when it came across my desk, we were thrilled that something was finally out, because we had been working on this issue for quite a while. And I give a lot of credit to our parents who were involved in this, you know, some providers in the community that were involved in this that worked closely with us on this topic, and staff members who were, you know, way ahead of that. And we had been asking for guidance from the State Ed Department for quite some time. So my feeling when that finally came across the desk was, this is great. They have something out, and this will help other districts. It also, for us, helped institutionalize or memorialize some of the things that we had been doing. And it recognized that the pieces that we had already put into place in terms of our own policy at Brighton were legitimate, were supported, were institutionalized by the State Ed Department, too.
Your first job as a superintendent was not at Brighton, right? You were in
Correct.
A different district?
Yep.
How much has changed since that? What was the first year you were a superintendent?
So 10 years ago.
10 years ago.
So,
how much
yep.
has changed in 10 years?
I'm sorry, 11 years ago. Quite a bit. I mean, but I think also so much has changed in terms of social policy and our own recognition of the need to be more inclusive, and whether that's same-sex marriage, just the notion of transgender and understanding the entire piece of LGBTQ and that there's more to it than, and even if we look at the name change, this is not anymore Gay-Straight Alliance, but Gender-Sexuality Alliance, and it's bigger than that, as our students will explain much better than I. So I think that it's changed pretty dramatically. I also, you know, I was in a different area in Brighton. There's been, I think, for a long time, a recognition of inclusivity in a different way. It's a community itself beyond just the school district that I think has been at the forefront of these issues, and whether that's partner benefits that have been afforded for a long time. This is something that's been important in our community for quite some time.
I want to ask both the superintendent and Rowan about the importance when it comes to this kind of education and training. Of going in, first of all, from your perspective, Kevin, knowing that there is a lot, I think, for everybody to learn and to understand and to be, you know, sort of open-minded and willing to know that occasionally we may misstep. And that can be really, it can feel really fraught for people. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if your staff has felt like, I mean, have you had conversations with teachers about this? You know, tell me a little bit about
that. Oh, sure. So, I mean, I think there's a few key aspects to this. First of all, this is above all else a safety issue, right? So making sure you have an environment that is safe, is comfortable, is inclusive, is about and supporting every person for who they are. We talk a lot about we love each person for who they are and who they say they are. And I think, again, going back to it always is, this is a safety issue more than anything, making sure that people feel comfortable. But our conversation with the staff, because transgender in particular was such a challenge for people to wrap their head around. You know, this is not a topic. And even prior to Caitlyn Jenner's transition and the media around that, it's not something that people knew a lot about or understood. So we tried to create situations in training with Rowan, where people felt very comfortable asking questions and maybe saying the wrong thing. And Rowan's great at making people feel comfortable. You know, just ask me the question. And it's okay. Let's have an open dialogue about this. And it really touches on a lot of issues for people that are a struggle. Their own, you know, just upbringing, their own notions of sexuality, their own notions of gender. It really can be very uncomfortable. But I think it's about setting up an environment where people feel comfortable asking questions, maybe saying the wrong thing, because they're trying. Rowan's great about that. I mean, we're really concerned in all different ways about pronouns. You know, what if I say it the wrong way? And I remember Rowan reassuring us and the staff, it's okay. You're trying. You know, keep trying to figure that out. It takes time to figure this out.
Yeah, and Rowan, I read a piece this morning by Damon Linker, who is, I think, a centrist Democrat journalist, and he was writing sort of an evaluation of the Obama presidency. And what he said was that he thinks Democrats have done a very good job in some ways at advancing inclusion. I mean, you go back to the beginning of January 2009, we had just elected a president who said because of his religious underpinnings, he could not support same-sex marriage. That's obviously changed dramatically. Linker is concerned that when it comes to equality, inclusion, whether it's the T in the LGBTQ and sort of all the parts of this, that Democrats have gone from saying, hey, let's be open-minded, just the way Kevin just talked about, to saying, if you're not fully on board and you don't get it yet, you're a problem. And that's what Damon is sort of pushing back against, saying, hey, this is still a process for this country, and that people may feel alienated if they make a mistake, if you sort of castigate them. How do you feel about that? How important is it to make people feel like, as long as their intention is good here, we may misstep, and we've got to work together?
I mean, I think it's incredibly important to recognize that people are going to make mistakes. as human beings, we're completely fallible. I make it a point in my trainings to say that I also make mistakes around people's pronouns and names, and I know that I shouldn't because this is my full-time job and people in my life that I care about and I love, you know, it's a process. It is. We're asking folks to kind of reconfigure parts of their brains and make new connections in their neurons and synapses to see someone with a different name and a different pronoun. And I think what's really important is that the effort is put in. The effort really has to be there. It's not just, well, it's okay if you made a mistake, no big deal. It's okay that you made a mistake. You're going to make a mistake. Apologize, correct it, and really put in the work next time to get it right. Because I think what we really need to focus on is that we want to be as respectful as possible to each other. This is how we're going to make that respectful connection and to communicate properly with each other. The mistakes are going to happen. I think that what happens, the worst part is when people are so afraid to make a mistake that they don't talk. That's the piece that we really can't have, because that shuts down the communication. That makes students feel even more isolated. If they're that one kid in their school who's transitioning and everyone's scared to mess up in front of them, and so they just don't talk to them anymore, that's worse, I think, than the occasional misstep because someone made an honest mistake. So it's really about that, the intent and the impact there that folks are having.
Now, when it comes to training, mm-hmm. give me a sense for how you approach it. I mean, is every district different? Does one district tell you this is what we need versus this, or do you have kind of a standard way of working with them?
We certainly have kind of bare-bones structure for a lot of our presentations, but we do work specifically with every single district and every school, as every school and every district is going to be different. The way that we approach the conversation for elementary school teachers is going to be vastly different than how we might approach it for high school teachers. And so we certainly have components that we think are important in each training, you know, talking about respectful communication, talking about the coming out process, talking about components of gender and orientation, and separating those things, I think, can be incredibly important for folks to just have in their knowledge base. But the direction of the conversation and the focus can sometimes change depending on what school we're in, what district, and it's all about the communication with the administration at that point.
Okay, so can you kind of give me an example here? You'll kind of take me through what a staff training may be like.
Sure. So it varies always. The timing can vary incredibly. Sometimes we have 1 hour because we've got that mandatory staff PD right after school from like 3 to 4, and they're all chomping at the bit to leave because they've been there since 7 a.m. Sometimes we have 3.5 hours with the nursing staff of one school. But for the most part, we always try and share a personal coming out story of an individual, whether that's me because I'm the one doing the training at that moment, or bringing in another member of our speakers bureau to speak to their experience. In schools specifically, what it was like for them coming out, what might have been better for them in the environment, what could have helped, and then really focusing in on the coming out experience. We go through a developmental model about coming out to help folks really understand how behavior may manifest itself. They start to recognize that in their students. You can kind of see light bulbs going off while we're going through that. Teachers going, oh yeah, that's that kid I have in my class right now. This makes so much more sense. And now I know how I might be able to help better. Then we definitely do talk about components of identity, helping people understand the difference between gender identity and sexual orientation. I think a lot of times, because we've never had these conversations at length, especially not in school, but not even in college or beyond, folks often conflate gay and transgender or don't really understand where the differences are in lots of the letters in the kind of alphabet soup of our community. And so helping people to kind of parse those out is so crucial. Definitely having a conversation around gender expression or the way that folks really portray their gender out loud and how that impacts all of our students. Most of the anti-LGBT bullying and discrimination that we see, especially in schools, stems from gender expression, not simply from perceived orientation or gender, but how somebody looks, how they're doing their hair, whether they're acting too girly or too boyish or something like that. So definitely having a huge conversation on that. And then we definitely try and have folks in a conversation with each other looking at, how do we move forward? What do we do with the information that's just been given to us? How can we implement this in our language, in our policies, in our curriculum even? So getting them to start brainstorming together as groups moving forward to kind of leave them with something to do so we're not just dumping information and then leaving. And we found that that's really the most helpful way, and it really sparks a conversation, and we are usually back in pretty soon to continue the conversation.
How many districts do you think you've worked in locally?
I would say somewhere around 25 districts in the last 2 years alone.
Just the last 2 years alone.
Yep.
Yeah, so a big surge in interest. And listeners, yep. If you have any questions or comments, first of all, if you've got, Rowan is one of the really good educators, and if you've got any questions in general, Rowan is always glad to help. It's 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. If you're curious about, your own district, if your own district has had training, or if you'd like to kind of get your district in touch with the Gay Alliance and with Rowan, how are districts generally doing it? I think you mentioned in an email, a lot of it's sort of word of mouth. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. We are almost entirely word of mouth at this point. We don't exactly have an aggressive marketing strategy at the Gay Alliance. We are here as a resource for the community. And up until kind of the floodgates opened, we were only in a couple of districts, usually kind of doing some reactive crisis intervention, like there was a bullying debacle or something like that, and we would go in and kind of help smooth things over. But really what's happened is, one district picked up the phone and called, and that person works in one district but lives in another one, so they tipped off a friend who works in that one, and people just started calling and kind of sharing word of mouth recommendations for us.
We're going to be talking to Kiki and Francis just from the student perspective on sort of, again, that school environment, the school climate, how they think it is working in Brighton as an example. I see the phone ringing as well. Rowan mentioned bullying. How much do you focus a training on how to handle and how to address bullying? I mean, bullying is a broad category, but LGBTQ bullying can be a problem. How do you address that?
Absolutely. So we certainly don't spend the majority of the time
Sure.
looking at that, but we certainly make it a point to help, especially teachers and staff, understand that in order to create the sort of inclusive and supportive environment that we're looking to help them foster, there has to be intervention. Saying something, anything, when we're seeing or hearing an anti-LGBT comment or seeing hostile behavior towards LGBT students or even students who are just perceived to be LGBT, they don't even have to be in the community to be a target of this sort of harassment. Somebody just has to say something, because if you let it go or you assume that another teacher is going to handle it, that other teacher is thinking the exact same thing, and those students are recognizing that behavior. The ones who are perpetrating the bullying or harassment are almost getting kind of like an implicit approval from teachers if no one's saying something, and other students who may be in the community or are just fearful of bullying or harassment are recognizing that someone doesn't have their back. And so just getting teachers to think about just one small thing, having that like hip pocket response to an offhanded anti-LGBT comment or behavior, can be so, so, so helpful.
Okay. Our first call has a question for Owen, and I think the students might be able to weigh in as well, because I think it's a question that Dan in Rochester has. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, how you doing? I understand your point, and I'm not so young, but I've never been an advocate of cruelty, even in high school, and I was a jock, and bullying I perceived to be very bad. But how in the world are you going to address a 15-year-old boy, say a Muslim boy, whose culture is intolerant of this, and I'm sure in Christian cultures it's true also, his worldview is set. How in the world are you going to get this person to change their attitude or their vision or the way they perceive the LGBT community?
How to change someone's feeling at the age of 15? Rowan, I'll start with you. Thank you, Dan. Go ahead, Rowan.
Yeah, absolutely. Dan, thank you so much for that question. Such a really good one and very complex and layered. I think that what's most important is that's an opportunity for a school to talk about their values, what it means to be a member of that school community, what it means to be a member of that local community, what it means to be a member of the broader global community, and how we treat each other and what that's going to mean, especially, honestly, at the age when folks are in middle and high school in that teenage space. I don't think anyone's ever really set in their ways, and I think that looking at a student as almost being kind of not too far gone, but so entrenched in their beliefs that we can't have that honest conversation backwards and forwards is a real loss. So I think that that's really an opportunity for conversation. And we never think about, oh, we're just going to change everyone's minds after 1 second. Really, what it really is just connecting through sharing stories and anecdotes and jokes so that hearts and minds change over time, knowing that it's not a one-and-done deal and that may require multiple conversations, but helping people understand that certain behaviors are unacceptable, and then that we really need to be fostering an environment where we're all feeling as comfortable as possible, especially in schools, so that we can feel free to learn and grow as human beings.
Let me ask Kiki and Francis how they feel about if you had a classmate who you saw was either engaged in bullying or sort of making statements that you felt were objectionable. What's the route you would take with that?
Personally, I would...
Go ahead, Kiki, go ahead.
Yeah, I would be asking them to see it from our perspective as somebody from the LGBT community and to see how we would personally deal with such an issue rather than them actually putting the issue on us.
Okay, Francis?
Yeah, and I know people who have been bullied or have at least... have become uncomfortable in their surroundings and who they're with, and it's detracting from their the kind of activities that they're involved in because of the people around them, and how they have gotten help and are also almost not wanting exact help, but at least hesitating to ask some people because they're scared and because that they think that the more they talk about this, they might be opening up to more, even more discrimination or having it to be more of a big deal. And I think it's hard to go through that, but it definitely is there.
Yeah, before I go back to Dan, hang there, Dan. I want to ask the superintendent about this because, you know, I'm sure in your district, in every district, bullying does happen. It has happened. And, you know, there could be a punitive approach and there could be sort of a restorative approach. The goal, I think, with any sort of transgression in society should be that you would hope that the person who's committed it won't do it again. And what we tend to find is that more punitive approaches when it comes to, look at the U.S. prison population, look at drugs, right? Look at drug courts versus just pure incarceration. What works is often something that we would call more restorative, but there's also an urge sometimes just to be punitive. And I'm curious to know how you would approach a 15-year-old. Would you have a conversation? Would you invite him into your office? Man, what happens in Brighton?
Yeah, it's a great question. I want to make one comment regarding Dan's question. I think that any of the most hardline worldview, and it just wouldn't be restricted perhaps to, you know, a Muslim worldview, because I think we see it in many other places. It becomes challenging to deal with in the school environment because we try and promote constantly an atmosphere of respect, kindness, self-control, integrity, and talk about tolerance and appreciation of everybody. In Brighton, we talk about the Brighton beliefs all the time. And really, it's about making sure that worldview is, although you're entitled to that worldview, you're not entitled to act upon that in the school environment in a way that hurts another person. And so we try and always promote an environment where if that's your feeling, if that's your opinion, we hope over time that you'll grow and think about it differently based on the work that we're doing with you. However, in the public school environment, that's fine. You just can't let that impact your work. So how we then deal with that when we find students are impacted by that is there are occasions, depending on the level of the discipline and the scenario, where the process ends up involving me or my office, but largely it would happen more at the building level or with the principal. But in many cases now, it's the balance between punitive and restorative. There is always, when you impact a school environment, some punitive effect or punitive consequence to a degree. However, we do become much more focused, more and more, I think, all the time on the restorative practice. We've worked with many community partners to have that student work with an agency outside of the school district that might deal with these issues. It would not, we haven't done this, but an example would be if we had the student meet with Rowan or somebody from the Gay Alliance to talk through that or to have some other type of educational piece to this. We've done it with race issues, with a variety of other circumstances that are very similar to this, so that hopefully the student can learn and understand from a different perspective, similar to how Francis and Kiki expressed it, you know, the impact that their actions may have. And again, they can walk away with the same worldview if they choose to do that. In a free, open, democratic society, we're entitled to that. We're just not entitled to hurt other people with that.
Okay. Dan? What do you think, Dan? I don't hear him. Well, I'll let you go, Dan, but I'll say Dan brought up, you know, a hypothetical student who is a Muslim. I think, Kevin, there's people from all backgrounds who may come in to a conversation, to a school atmosphere, and say, I feel such and such. And what you're simply saying is you can feel that way. You can't act in a way that hurts other people. But Rowan, let me just kind of follow up on Dan's question here, because maybe Dan would say, look, we have friends, and on this program, I've met a lot of friends in this community who are Christian, who are Muslim, who are Jewish, who are atheist, all kinds of different backgrounds. And some, because of religion, say, look, I'm trying to be the best community member I can be, but my religion tells me I've got a problem with being gay. I've heard that before. Mm-hmm. And the question then is, do you sit down and try to change their mind? Now, Kevin may have a different perspective as a school superintendent. I don't even know if you're allowed to sit down and say that you, I think your religion's wrong on this one. But do you, Rowan, think that we need to sit down and say, it's 2017 and inclusion means being able to talk about religious belief even if we think it's wrong? You have a right to believe it, but we think that, you are missing the boat on inclusion. How do you feel about that?
I certainly would not phrase it like that.
Okay.
No, I think that especially for us in our programming, it is understanding that people are coming to this conversation with their own opinions, with their own beliefs, with their own backgrounds. We're all coming from the myriad of identities that we already have, the information that we've received, the amount of education we may have had around other groups that we don't belong to, and respecting that space that people are coming from in order to actually have an authentic conversation with them. So, you know, if we are looking at someone who, for many number of reasons, whether it be religious objection or something else entirely, is feeling uncomfortable about this conversation or even feeling a little resentful about having to have the conversation as part of their professional work or as part of their life in school, I think what matters most is making sure that folks know we're not trying to change your mind. What we're trying to do is start a conversation about why it matters that we're talking about this in the first place. Because for so long, there was absolutely zero conversation about the LGBT community, especially in our public schools. I graduated high school in Albany in 2010. There was nothing, absolutely nothing. We talked about it in health class maybe once, and we were talking about the AIDS epidemic. That was all the official curriculum I ever had about the LGBT community. And if that's all any of our students are getting, it's completely understandable why the knowledge base that exists for the general population is what it is at this point. So what matters so much is just being able to talk about it. Saying the words out loud, it makes people a little more comfortable with them because they've seemed to be so taboo for so long that I think reassuring folks that, hey, you know, I'm coming in to talk to you for 2 hours. Who am I, honestly, to swan in and tell you that everything you've ever known for your whole life is wrong, right? I have no power to do that, and I don't want the power to do that. What I want to do is start a conversation and a dialogue around creating a sort of environment where all of our students are going to feel safe and supported. And that's really where it starts, is finding that common ground, because I have never found someone who's working in education who has disagreed with that statement. I've never found a teacher who said, well, I don't want all of my students to feel safe and supported here. If they can agree on that, then we can move forward. This is one of the ways that we're going to start that kind of conversation.
Sure. And do you occasionally encounter teachers who say, I want them to feel supported, but I don't get why we have to do this? You know, the status quo has been, you know, you don't talk about these things.
Yeah, absolutely. I've certainly we've seen responses like that, the kind of like, yeah, this is like a no-brainer to us. We don't tolerate that here in our district. We don't tolerate bullying. We don't blah, 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 blah. Fill in the blanks, if you will. But then I think through the course of actually sitting through the training and going through our programming, people will start to recognize why it does matter. You know, we can throw as many statistics as folks as we want. You know, we can talk about how 75% of LGBTQ identified students in this country experience bullying and harassment in their schools. We can talk about how over a third of LGBTQ identified students skip school at least once a month because they don't feel safe in their school environment. We can talk about the suicide attempt rate within LGBT youth. But what I think really, really grasps people is starting to understand that we've never had this conversation before. That's why I'm here, you know? That's why we're doing the work that we're doing. And so it starts to really sink in that it is an important conversation to have, whether it's happened before or not.
Has the suicide attempt rate in the transgender community gotten any better in recent years? I mean, those numbers are horrifying when you say that.
Yes, they are. With the publication of the most recent kind of nationwide transgender survey, the results came out in December of 2016, so just a month ago. Mm-hmm. The numbers have actually stayed exactly where they were from 3 years ago. So a little over 40% of the trans population in the United States will attempt suicide at least once in their lifetime. So that's not specific to young people or young adults. That's over the lifetime, but that's a staggering statistic. That's almost half.
You're hearing Rowan Collins, an education coordinator of the LGBTQ Academy at the Gay Alliance of the Genesee Valley. Kevin McGowan is here, superintendent of the Brighton Central School District, and students Kiki Senda and Francis Reka are here. They are members of the Gender and Sexuality Alliance Club at Brighton High School. After our only break of the hour, we're going to ask them, you know, if they feel that school feels like an inclusive place and if the work that has been under, you know, been underway here is working. So we'll get the student perspective. And if you want to call the program, it's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI. If you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We're right back. I'm Evan Dawson, Thursday on the Next Connections. First hour, from Donald Trump to the Cleveland Clinic, there's been a lot of confusion over vaccines. The Cleveland Clinic even putting out a statement refuting what one of their doctors wrote this week about risks of vaccines. We'll talk about it. Then in our second hour, the candy diet, the candy generation. When even Bravo and the History Channel have marriage competitions, what's happening to culture? Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, Superintendent McGowan. There's a Mosaic Club, and there are kind of student unions at Brighton. Before I talk to the students, just remind our listeners what kind of what Mosaic is and what, you know, the approach to diversity is at Brighton.
Oh, thanks for asking. So the Mosaic Club is a group of students who represent all of our different types of, I'd say, diversity clubs. So Christian Student Union, Black Student Union, Latino Student Union, and those kids have come together over the last several years under the direction of their advisor, Chris Kantz, worked with many people, including a community organizer, so to speak, Mike Boucher, involved in, with the Free Group. And they have really been having deep and meaningful conversations about diversity, about appreciating each other, about working with each other, about honoring each other's differences and embracing them, and embracing everybody who's part of that beautiful mosaic that we are.
Kiki Senda is a sophomore, and how do you feel about the school environment? Does it feel inclusive?
Yeah, it feels pretty inclusive to me. From my experience, I don't really face that much difficulties with being a non-binary individual, meaning I don't really conform to any, either male or female. Personally, I haven't faced many bullying experiences or at all, and if any at all. Everyone's been pretty accepting, and all the teachers have been really accommodating of my needs.
Okay, and what, you know, what relationship do you have with teachers who may just have basic questions about, you know, language, pronouns, etc.?
I usually just inform them of my pronouns as well as like how they fit in grammatically, and if they do have a problem with them, I do show them that they were in fact a word of the year like a few years ago, and they are completely valid. If they do have a question about my gender, I'm completely open to it, but I haven't faced any questions with them lately or at all.
Okay, so in other words, school feels pretty inclusive.
Yeah.
Okay. Frances, how do you feel?
I actually think it's a really good thing when teachers ask questions because it means that they're trying to understand, and it's better than just trying to assume the answer or just not saying anything at all to avoid the topic. And I know that there are some teachers, one of my teachers just doesn't like to use they and doesn't, like, just likes to try to avoid it when we're writing grammatically.
Avoid they?
Yeah, avoid the using they, their when writing. So I know it's not really a huge thing, but I think it is a good good sign when people are trying to understand and they're asking questions, and it really provides an opportunity for them to learn more about what they don't understand.
Okay. Ron, how do you feel about their answers to that? Is that kind of what you're going for?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's always really nice to hear, and I'm sure some of this may be informed by the fact that their superintendent is sitting across the table from them. But no, actually, I have no doubt that the completely truthful answers. That's really what I've been seeing and hearing, both from faculty, staff, and students within Brighton over the last 2 years or so that we've been working with them. And that's really, honestly, what we're going for, is just opening the door for some conversation. There's going to be a lot of things that, you know, people don't understand right off the bat, and there's only ever so much we can talk about in 2, 3, 4 hours of training, but just getting people comfortable to talk about these things and ask these sorts of questions and say, hey, I want to make sure I'm being as respectful as possible. Do you mind sharing your pronouns with me? And then having that person understand, if I don't really get it off the bat, I can ask more questions. I can engage with my student and feel like we're having an equal conversation so that I can be respectful in my day-to-day classroom.
All right, before I jump back to the phones, Carly in Rochester, I'm coming to you in just a second. I'll just ask Kiki and Frances. Kiki, have you have you ever not felt this way in school? I mean, I don't know if you've been in the Brighton District your whole life, but at any sort of a younger stage in your life, did you feel differently?
I've been in Brighton my whole life, but I haven't really experienced any bad experiences having to do with my identity. There were a few times when I've witnessed people throwing slurs around and in kind of in a joking way, but I haven't really brought anything up, and I do realize that it is a high school and things do get said, but it hasn't bothered me. I know it bothers some other people, but I do feel that overall everything's been pretty smooth.
Okay. Francis? Have you always felt sort of comfortable?
Right. I think that in general, I've always felt kind of secure. I mean, I personally have not faced a lot of discrimination, mainly because I'm very intimidating. And so a lot of people don't really talk to me anyway. But
why do you say you're intimidating?
I just kind of have a bold personality. I'm not very extroverted, but when you do talk to me, you can really tell what kind of person I am.
Kiki is nodding furiously over there.
Yeah. And I think it's a good thing. And there have been issues with people calling people names, people throwing out slurs, and but I think it overall is a good. It's been pretty safe, and I think that Brighton is especially a school district that does diversity well.
Okay. All right. Well, let me grab a phone call because Carly in Rochester has a question for the group. Go ahead, Carly.
Hi. I'm just wondering, how do you advise educators who encounter parents in disagreement with supporting inclusivity? Say their child bullies an LGBTQIA individual and the parent says, they deserve it, or they use a slur. And I'm just wondering how you extend these lessons into the home, or can you?
Carly, thanks for the phone call. I'm going to start with Rowan. Go ahead, Rowan.
Sure, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Carly, for that question. And that's something that comes up in our trainings a lot. Often we'll have a staff and faculty that's totally on board with this stuff and really kind of wondering how do we move this into the realm with our parents and families, because it takes a village, especially in terms of public education. There's that kind of the triangle of the student, the staff at school, as well as the parents, to kind of create the sort of environment that we want. So really what we try and do is hopefully allow folks to understand, much in the same way that they might communicate with a colleague who's having trouble really accepting this sort of conversation, to extend that out to parents who may also be resistant to the conversation or be providing pushback around the implementation of more inclusive practices and policies, is really just to think about, what does it mean to be a member of our community here? And if it means, to be inclusive, and it means to celebrate diversity, and it means to be, to have your integrity and to respect each other, then this is part of how we're doing that. To have that conversation and welcome the uncomfortableness of it, welcome that pushback, welcome that, that little bit of resistance into the conversation, not shutting folks down and saying, this is just how we're going to do it, and you really got to kind of put up with it. I think that what matters there is inviting people into the conversation and saying, hey, this is what we believe as a district, this is what we do, and we would love to help you see why this matters to us as a community.
Yeah, Carly, I think the thought experiment, I'm trying to put my best hope that parents wouldn't defend bullying, but parents, Superintendent McGowan, might say, look, I don't understand this. Why do you have to do this? You know what I mean? Do you encounter any pushback from parents when it comes to the embrace of diversity?
Very, very little.
Very little.
It's very isolated. Occasionally a question will be asked. But again, it's different in every community. And we have a community who, at kind of the core of its ethos is an acceptance of diversity, and not an acceptance, but an embracing of and a seeking more diversity in the community that people live in. So for us, it's very, very rare. I guess my advice to Carly, my thought around that would be to be very direct. It goes back to the question that was asked earlier by Dan. I don't think it's about changing people's worldview entirely in our sector from an administrator's perspective. It's about acknowledging that you have deeply held beliefs that I respect. Unfortunately, those deeply held beliefs can't encourage violence, bullying, or mistreatment of another person, that above all else, we believe here in respect, we believe in kindness. These are the things that we are teaching all the time. So even though that may be your world belief, and you may not understand why we have to talk about these things, for us, it's about promoting that type of environment. You also talked before about those statistics around violence, around the suicide rate. Again, when you go back to the safety issue and say, you know, despite your worldview, here are the numbers. This is the reality. This is what we owe to kids and families. This is a moral imperative. This is a safety issue for kids. And I think, to Carly's point, if she's an educator, some of these questions depend on the scenario you're in, the situation and the level that you're at or the position that you have in a district. But your code of conduct in every school district and your anti-discrimination policy would delineate that these things are unacceptable. So going back to those things and saying, look, it's right here. It says you can't do that. It says your child can't do that. You might not agree with it, but that's what it says. And those are the rules we live by.
If you're wondering if your own district has been in touch with the Gay Alliance of the Genesee Valley, and it's been a lot of local districts, but I don't think all of them, right, Roan? Western New York, there's a lot of school districts. And if you want to know and you want to get in touch with the Gay Alliance of the Genesee Valley and get in touch with Roan, what's the best way to do that, Roan?
The best way would be definitely on our website, which is gayalliance.org. You can also shoot us an email, education@gayalliance.org. We've got our center hours as well as a phone number there on our website. Easiest way to kind of get in touch with us, as well as recognizing some of the amazing programming and services that we have through the LGBTQ Center for the Gay Alliance.
Kiki and Francis, Carly on the phone was asking about, you know, what to do if parents sort of condone bullying. But again, I kind of pivoted that to just maybe parents who will say they don't understand. Kiki, have you encountered any pushback from friends, from friends' parents, that kind of people in the community? Is that a concern for you?
No, for me personally, everybody, all my friends and their families have been really accepting of me, mm-hmm. if they do know about my identity. But for the most part, everybody's been pretty all right with me. Yeah,
that's great. Francis?
Actually, I know people whose parents don't support them, and it it causes them to go through a lot of trouble. And it's like a really bad situation for them because their parents don't necessarily accept them or refuse to call them by the right pronouns or by a chosen name. But I think there is somewhat of a limit of what you can do to change that because it's not your position. But it is something that's really hard to face for some. And it's something that not everyone, like, would notice, but it's really there.
Well, I want to ask Superintendent McGowan a question that I hope doesn't make him regret coming on the show today, but I'm going to ask anyway here. And let me just give you a little bit sort of a foundation before I ask the question, which is this. I'm not asking the question as a way of saying that rural areas, rural districts, are lesser? No, not saying that at all. I think we have come to a point in this country where we're really having this debate about bubbles and about the divide, about voting divides, about self-segregation, about who lives where. And I don't want to ask this question at all with some sort of premise of lesser or more, just an observation. When I read interviews, when I read stories, when I read books, we hear from people in the LGBTQ community, some who have these remarkable experiences. Some grew up in rural areas and have remarkable experiences. And some where there's a little more pushback. They encounter a little more struggle. Same for people of color. So I'm curious to know, because you've been a superintendent in Brighton and then in a district that's much more rural, you know, do you see this as an issue? You know, the inclusion, celebration of diversity, happening everywhere the way you'd like it? Is it happening more, you know, as you get closer to centers of population? And what do you kind of want to see happen with that?
That's a great question. No, I don't. I would never regret coming to the show. I would say this, you know, it is definitely different other places. There's no question. And I think that's a very valid point. I struggle with this a little bit in the bigger context of the most recent election and this interesting question and debate around social policy change and how far did certain segments of our population get pushed out of their comfort zone and how quickly did they get pushed to get to a point where their frustration resulted in pushing back really hard. I wonder about that. And I'm not saying that happened. I'm not saying I know the answer to that. But I think about that all the time, and I think about people's comfort level. And it plays into the previous questions about people's worldviews and these deeply held worldviews. And I think my focus in answering those questions on not trying to change somebody's worldview, but saying this is about safety, this is about a moral decision to love and care for people for who they say they are, and not to judge that. That in our environment, we're not going to judge that. We're going to say, you are who you say you are. We're going to love you for that, and we're going to support you in every way we can. It is different in other environments. It's easier to say that in a community that supports that. It's easier to say that in a community where that's been part of the ethos for a long time. However, it's perhaps much more important for it to be said in those communities. And it's important for there to be a lot of courage and leadership to accept people's limitations because of their worldview and because of perhaps deeply held religious views, but at the same time always go back to this moral imperative to keep people safe, to love and care and support them for who they are. And it's difficult. There have been examples in most recent memory in the diversity question, and I look at our colleague Mike Crum in Spencer Port and the school board in Spencer Port that I think did a remarkable job of navigating a difficult discussion around the urban-suburban program and beginning that program there. But they had the courage and leadership to see that through because it was the right thing for many, many reasons. And I think that that's the type of approach that ought to be taken. It's respectfulness of a community's views. It's respectfulness of their differences, but pushing always towards, but this is what we owe to kids and families in a world where we need to be embracing and loving and supporting each other.
Okay. And Rowan, and the work that you're doing in schools locally, how often are you getting a call or hearing from a district that is maybe more rural? I mean, is most of your work centered locally here, city suburbs, et cetera, or are you occasionally going out sort of farther afield?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We are in urban, suburban, and rural districts throughout Monroe County, and then a couple that kind of tick out to the outside counties to both our east and our west. Actually, one of the first districts that we were actually really involved with was one of our more rural districts. I've had amazing conversations and amazing trainings with people of all sorts of different districts. And so I think that, it would be dangerous to assume that I would be having one sort of conversation or one sort of training in any one district, in any one building. It changes so much, which is kind of the fun of my job. There's never the same day twice, which is kind of neat. But, I think that going in and thinking, oh, this is going to be a really challenging audience, or, you know, this is going to be, we're going to have to take this to a 101 level, is almost demeaning to the folks that I'm going to be going and talking to. So I walk in with the same expectation of everyone, and I just, you know, you stay flexible and you stay ready to have the conversation that is needed to be having that day.
Yeah, not long ago, I was in a very, I was in a rural area in our region, hundreds of people in a room. And again, because I don't want to be too blunt or name names, I will just say the first speaker made a joke about transgender Americans. And this is in a mostly conservative rural area. And the joke landed with a thud. Mm-hmm. You know, and I actually heard a couple people remark, you know, that's not cool, that's not okay. And then later heard some people remark that, you know, somebody said something like, you can't make that joke even here. You know, and I thought, that's an interesting way to describe it. But what they were saying was, you know, maybe you thought you were safe, but that's not. And I thought it was a very interesting moment for me. Mm-hmm. But I'll start to close the conversation by asking you, Rowan, if you feel any differently after the last election. How do you feel, you know, your work going forward now?
Absolutely. I mean, I think like many other organizations, we are seeing that our work is more necessary than ever as we move towards a potentially different political climate in the next couple of years. Certainly with the executive office, but also local elections and midterm elections next year, just looking at creating a much more inclusive environment, a much more supportive environment, and also making sure that we're bridging some of the gaps that have existed before, making sure that we're not talking about each other in separate silos, that we're understanding the intersectionality of identity. You know, when we're talking about issues of race and we're talking about issues of class, those are LGBT issues as well. It's not a separate issue whatsoever. You know, when we're talking about Islamophobia or anti-Semitism, that's an LGBT issue as well. You know, we look at sexism or we're looking at misogyny in schools or in our greater society, that's also an LGBT issue. And so understanding that we are really only going to be stronger together and that the conversation really does need to keep happening. You know, I'm hoping that I will work myself out of a job eventually, that I'll talk to everyone, and, you know, we will have folks who, you know, they get it, and it starts to click for everyone, and we understand that creating these spaces for people is necessary, and I can make a nice early retirement, and, you know, just pop out every once in a while, but not yet. So the work is more necessary than ever, and we are excited to do it.
Kiki and Francis, any difference of feeling after the last election? Kiki?
I guess after the last election, everybody, you could basically tell who was willing to accept you and who wasn't because of people's political views, and that made me know, like, who I should stay away from in terms of
brought it
of
more
safety.
To the surface for you?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
So in terms of that, I don't feel any less different in my surroundings. I don't feel any less safe or more safe. I guess there's no change, but overall, I do know that there are people who are willing to, or like who might share views that are offensive and hurtful towards others as well.
Okay. Francis?
Yeah, I think what the recent election has really brought up is like political views of people that like you didn't, like you kind of, if you assumed you would get it wrong, like you wouldn't, you didn't know that their political views reflect that. And well, you didn't realize that they thought the things that you thought they never would. Mm-hmm. So, yeah,
so,
it just
it
brought up
brought
a lot
more
of
to
new
the surface.
Things.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think as Rowan says, these conversations continue, and I don't think you're going to be out of work for a long time.
We hope not.
Same thing that Scott. Same thing that Scott Fearing, the executive director of the Alliance, he said after marriage equality passed, people said, "Well, I guess you're out of a job now," and he said, "Are you kidding?"
Rightly so.
Rowan, again, one more time, the website to find you, to get in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. We are at gayalliance.org. Our phone number is 585-244-8640. We're located right there at 100 College Ave, 5 days a week, and our evening hours, Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays.
Thanks for being here.
Thank
appreciate
you very much,
it,
Evan. I appreciate it.
Kiki and Francis, nice meeting you. Thank you for coming in and sharing your experience with us.
Thank you.
And
yes.
Superintendent McGowan, nice to see you again. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, as always. Thanks, Evan.
Have a good afternoon. Our thanks to Kat Schwartz, the engineer, Megan Mack, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson, and we'll talk with you Thursday on Member Supported Public Radio.